a really innovative idea that they put forward. And since we are often in coalition with them, brought it to the RPA and also brought it to our mayor, Mayor McLaughlin, who is a member, a founding member of the Richmond Progressive Alliance. This was late last spring. And this was the notion of perhaps we could use the concept of eminent domain in a really new way. As you know, traditionally, eminent domain has been used to take people out of their homes if they want to build a highway or a sports complex or something like that. People's homes have been forcibly sold, they've had to move, and then the property's been used for some other public purpose. Well, this is sort of the reverse of that. This is using eminent domain to keep people in their homes. So the basic idea is that we have these it's an epidemic of underwater mortgages, and these are mortgages where the principal that is owed on the home is way more than the current value of the home, because, you know, with the foreclosure crisis, the values, home values, dropped drastically. And of course, this has affected city services because the property tax revenues are dropped and everything. But and it's persisted. You know, in much of the country, the home values are starting to bounce back up, but they're still very low here.
And frankly, even bouncing back up, since banks weren't willing to do the modifications, you could be in, you could be paying for 30, 40 years on a mortgage until it got up to even, and in many cases, not live that long. Marilyn?
Right. And the problem, the real problem that makes people so vulnerable when their mortgage is underwater is, you know, if you have, if the value of your home is more than what the mortgage is, the mortgage principal, you at least have that safety check. You have a little equity in your home. If, you know, you come across hard times, you, there's a layoff or illness in the family, or something happens, and you really can't keep up with your mortgage, you can always put your home on the market, you can sell it, and you've still got, you know, you get out what your equity is. You have something there in your hand that you can use to perhaps as a down payment on the smaller home, or you could move somewhere else. You've got something to work with.
Housing has been the root of citizen wealth. That's exactly right. Yeah, if it's underwater, it's a different problem, isn't it?
Yeah, that's the whole why home ownership is so appealing. It gives you something, you know, a little nest egg. But with it being underwater, you've really got nothing. In fact, I'd like to invite your listeners to recall that this situation of widespread underwater mortgages is pretty much unprecedented since the Great Depression. You know, since the Great Depression, by and large, real estate generally goes up with some small fluctuations. But since 2008, we've had this situation where it's been a really deep crisis. So that's why we were looking for some more, some kind of a solution that could not only help Richmond, but that other cities could use. And so here's how it works. Because the market value of the homes is so low, we've worked with different agencies that actually rate and value the value of mortgages. And the value of a mortgage out on the open market relates to the actual value of the collateral that secures it. And so the experts that we have consulted with have assured us that the market value of these mortgages is actually quite a lot less than the amount of principal that is still owed on them. And so what the city of Richmond has already done is it has made an offer to purchase these mortgages at what we consider to be the market value, which is in every case it's somewhat less than the it's just a little bit less than the current market value of the home to account for different fees and all the transaction
closing costs, right?
Right, the closing costs. So the city has put that offer out there on about 600 homes. I believe Richmond has upwards of around 1,200 underwater mortgages. So we're starting with about half of them. And they're all what are known as private label securities. These are the mortgages where, you know, you get a mortgage to buy your home, and then that mortgage is sold on the secondary market it's resold, it's bundled, it's turned into mortgage-labeled securities. And these mortgage-labeled securities are traded out of the open market.
Well, anybody who's ever bought a house is always surprised when you first get your mortgage just with one bank, and then if you don't sell within 5 or 6 years, you may go through 3 or 4 different mortgage companies every year. It seems like you were getting a new place in Dallas or Oklahoma or someplace that you were supposed to send your money to. But yeah, so they bundle them all up, and when they made a mess, that's how this all happened. But now they're talking about rebundling them, from what I'm listening to you, Marilyn, so that you could refinance them at that at real market value, not at these inflated pre-recession prices, And people would be able to then repurchase their home that had then been
exactly. This is the idea, because when they're rebundled, you get you don't even often know who owns the mortgage, because it's a servicer. All of these bundled mortgages use different companies, often banks, that are called mortgage servicers, and the servicer is the company that actually sends you your bill every month. And those services, as you said, change frequently. So in any event, so the idea is we've made the offer, and we've gotten no response. So that's sort of where we stand now. The holders of the mortgages are holding firm. They don't want to sell voluntarily. But the idea is, we would like to purchase these mortgages. The city's working with another partner, a company that has lined up investors to provide the money so the city could purchase these mortgages. Once we purchase them at what we consider fair market value, we would immediately turn around and refinance them, with the homeowner staying right in their home, not losing their home. It would be refinanced to an amount so that the homeowner would have at least 5% equity. So the refinancing amount would be just 5% below the actual market value of the home. It would reduce their principal, reduce their monthly payments, allow them to stay in the home, and
save neighborhoods.
Save the neighborhoods, inject a little more money into the local economy, give people some relief, and just overall stabilize the market.
It's a win-win for everybody. But I know when the reports, when Ace and others tried this in Riverside, there were stories about, private planes from Wall Street, lined up on the runway in Riverside County, trying to, threaten and cajole and intimidate the city council there into not doing this plan. So Richmond really stood up to try to do this, didn't they?
Right. They have. Now, here's where we stand. So we do have the decisions are made in Richmond by a city council of 7. Elected officials, and one of those elected officials is our mayor, Mayor McLaughlin, who's become a huge champion of this, and she's traveled in different parts of the country. She's been featured in the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal for being a chief spokesperson for this in our city, and we, love and admire her very much. So the City Council of 7 in Richmond makes the decision. The majority of our council, Mayor McLaughlin and 3 other council members, 4 in all together, have voted to direct our staff, our city manager, to work on this, to proceed as much as they can, and to make the offers. So that's where we stood. We've made the offers on the homes. Now, to proceed to the next step and initiate the eminent domain process to actually force the sale at fair prices, of course, of the mortgages, would require a supermajority of the council, which would be 5 of the 7 votes. And at present time, we do not have support from a 5th council person, because, as you say, the banks have been here as well, and they've been trying to influence our council members also. The reason we have at least 4 is because, Richmond, California has a very strong progressive movement that's been in place. And this is, in great part thanks to the RPA, which was founded. I was one of the co-founders.
Bless your heart.
Years ago. Yeah. To bring some grassroots politics and to promote, candidates who speak for the people and who take no corporate money in their campaigns and who are really there to look for, creative, innovative solutions that will work for people, especially our most vulnerable populations. We have, Richmond is a working class city. We have a lot of very low income people, a lot of residents of color. And, you know, we've lived in the shadow of the Chevron refinery for decades. And, you know, the pollution there has disproportionately affected the low-income communities of color. And they're starting to say, wait a minute, we deserve better. And the same thing goes with this housing crisis. We think everyone deserves to have, you know, a safe and an attractive neighborhood.
Marilyn, years ago, I have to tell you this, because a lot of people now in these days think the Bay Area, San Francisco, everybody's a high-tech billionaire. But I can remember some years ago, and it may have been 15 or 20 years ago, being in a local Acorn Action there in Richmond. And we're at a street corner. I forget what the action was. And about 20, 25 people there. So talking to people, I started asking them where they were from. Obviously, Acorn started in Arkansas. I live in New Orleans. We started visiting. Almost everybody was from Arkansas, Mississippi, Louisiana, Texas.
Right,
that happened to be there. But so Richmond's always been a special city to me. Obviously, I spent 38 years with Acorn, so I'm very familiar with the history, and California Acorn is one of the great organizations. So it's wonderful to see, to hear your story of Richmond. I'm talking to Marilyn Langlois, who's the coordinator for the Richmond Progressive Alliance's steering committee, and we're talking about Richmond, California, and their very dramatic fight to use eminent domain to make a difference in the foreclosure fight. But that's not the only fight they've been involved in. Why don't you give us a sense of what you've done with Chevron, one of the world's biggest companies?
Sure.
Because for a long time, Richmond just seemed like it was a Chevron company town, wouldn't it?
Sure. Be glad to. Before I address that, I just want to pick up on what you said earlier, the migration of the population to Richmond. I don't know if your listeners are aware, but prior to 1940, there were about 20,000 people here in the city, and by 1942, there were 100,000 people in our city. Because of the shipyards during World War II, there was huge migration from areas, you know, with depressed economies, from Arkansas, from Louisiana, from Mississippi, from Alabama, from Texas, and multiracial, huge migrations, and it just changed the city overnight, and it was, you know, put everybody together here. It was an incredible, you know, explosion of population cultures, you know, clashes, learning to live with each other, learning to work with each other. And so it's a real interesting heritage that we're very proud of.
And well, and not only that, two of your members, Steve Early and Mike Parker, took me by the museum that was in the old Kaiser, for the steelworks, I guess that was, right on the water, which is amazing and tells the story you're telling. If anybody's in the Bay Area, get off the Google train and go over and see, I forget what the name of it is, but it's a beautiful facility.
It's the Rosie the Riveter World War II Homefront National Park.
Exactly, Rosie the Riveter. I knew it was, you know, it just slipped me. But the Homefront National Park, and it's run by the National Park Service. It's got we didn't have a cup of coffee, but it's got a little cafe in there, a gift shop. We talked to some woman who was a volunteer there, and she was still in her 90s. I mean, she could tell you the story going all the way back.
Yeah.
But we don't want to get too far off there, but I'm so glad you mentioned that, because once again, people forget what it's all been about and why it's so important for people who have held on to their houses for 70 years or so, sometimes with families going back to that time, and now are in danger of losing their houses as prices skyrocketed at a certain time in the Bay Area, and now they've come back a little bit closer to the ground, but the banks still want to claim that these are assets, even though they know the market price in some cases is 30% of what it was. So,
sure. And also, just to wrap up on the foreclosure prevention, what our next steps are on that. Just want to finish that because I do want to get to the Chevron question. And what we're wanting to do, since we currently don't have the full 5 votes on the council, we're certainly working to elect more progressive council members next fall. But we're also trying to work with other cities. There's a number of other cities, both in the Bay Area, California, and other parts of the country.
Tell us about this. This is one of my questions, too. So what other cities have you heard from? Where can we be helpful?
There's a lot, and it's tricky because, as you said, they're being put under immense pressure.
Right.
For a while, El Monte in Southern California was quite interested in joining. Some of our neighboring cities right here, San Pablo, Vallejo, Oakland, San Francisco, and then Seattle, and there's a few cities back east. And so
I thought I'd heard Buffalo at one point. Was I? Am I?
I haven't heard Buffalo.
Okay, maybe it was some city in New York or Jersey. Something in Jersey as well. They were talking about this, but I can't. I don't think it was Jersey City. It was one of the smaller towns.
Yeah, I can't remember all the names, but in any event, so what Richmond is also prepared to do, and our majority, the four-person majority, has directed staff to prepare paperwork to set up a joint powers authority. It's called a JPA. And a joint powers authority exists when multiple jurisdictions come together for a purpose to benefit, you know, members of their communities in by working together in collaboration. So we have at least one of the city, and hopefully more and more will join. It would then become the Joint Powers Authority would be a legal entity, and that entity could then go ahead and proceed to exercise eminent domain to acquire the mortgages, refinance them at the lower principal, and keep the people in their home. And what we want, actually, what we're the method we're planning to use for this, once the JPA gets started, is instead of just going right ahead and encouraging them to go ahead and start the eminent domain process right away, but first take all of the cases and bring it to a court to review, get a court review after domain, and to confirm that this is in fact legal, that these prices are in fact fair ahead of time, and then go ahead with the eminent domain process so that, you know, we don't just sort of, you know, out there in the dark and then, you know, hopefully it'll all hold up in court afterwards. We want to get that court decision ahead of time just to make sure it's solid and we're not, you know, jeopardizing the residents in any way unnecessarily. So
how long would that take, though? Because that anything when you say court, you know, to me that says that's a couple of years.
Well,
can you expedite that if you go to court? Or
getting this opinion wouldn't take that long. What usually takes so long in the court is, you know, say if you did it afterwards, we could in theory exercise the eminent domain, do all the notifications, exercise the process. Then if the banks sue us, then it goes to court. They say you shouldn't have done this. Then we appeal other, you know.
Yeah, that takes years.
That's a long process. But simply going to court to say, get a stipulation, yes, we've reviewed this, it looks legal to us, these are fair prices, or no, you need to adjust your prices, you know, this and that. It takes a little time, but not an undue amount.
Well, and that's a good point. It puts some wind behind your a lot of places.
Yes.
I know in Arkansas, getting an attorney general's opinion is what people used to do, and some other states are like that. And essentially, they'd be certifying that it's, you know, what you're trying to do is likely legal, and of course, it doesn't stop, and God, nothing will stop banks from suing, it seems, these days. But it would probably freeze people in their homes, which would be a good thing too, wouldn't it, Marilyn?
Right.
Well, it's exciting to hear a new strategy, because this has been a disappointing thing for millions of families around the country, but millions are still hanging on. So if this could catch fire, it'd be a wonderful thing, wouldn't it, Marilyn?
Yeah. No, it would readjust the whole market. It would stabilize it. It's not going to hurt investors. It's not going to hurt pension funds. You know, it would just make that market adjustment and stabilize things, you know, and nobody wins when the stock market is, when prices are volatile. That's really not good. A few people make out well, but many people lose money. So this will stabilize things. So,
well, and this has been a point that people have been making for years since the banking crisis. This is part of the reason that many banks aren't doing this. This is their ghost banks.
Right.
They're being held up by these inflated capital.
Right.
They want to still claim these houses are worth, let's say, $350,000, even though they're worth, I know this was the case in Phoenix, $125,000 or $100,000.
Right.
And so by inflating their balance sheet, they're able to claim they're making billions of dollars worth of profits, even though they're essentially on life support and they were for a long time because of the government bailout, and won't do the biggest mistake of the whole modification program, was letting the Treasury Department be victim of the banks and try let the banks manage their own modification program, because this has just not done the job for millions of people. And this kind of action by RPA and ACE and others, and these, it sounds like the mayor and the other courageous council people in Richmond, is so important. Before we leave, we've only got another 5 or 7 minutes. Let's talk about Chevron, because, you know, a lot of people know Chevron, too, and y'all have been right there in their face.
Sure. No, it's been in our community for, you know, over a century, and it's been controlling our local politics. The thing people need to remember is Chevron has this absolutely beautiful strategic location right on our shoreline with a long wharf where the oil tankers can, they go through the Golden, pass through the Golden Gate, pull right up to the long wharf, unload the crude oil, put it in their tanks, and the refinery is right there. It's a great location. It's a big asset of the corporation. It's responsible for, you know, a lot of the huge profits that the corporation has enjoyed over the years. Nevertheless, traditionally they have controlled the council to minimize regulation in our city, and we're saying, wait a minute, this isn't right. There have been in the past issues of excessive flaring, which causes a lot of unnecessary pollution. There have been conditions of safety issues, you know, explosions. We just had an explosion and fire a year and a half ago that sent 15,000 people to the hospital. There have been attempts to make changes to the refinery, mask it as an upgrade when really it's allowing, you know, the processing of heavier or dirtier crude, both in Richmond and elsewhere. And there have been attempts to, you know, get a deal on paying less than their fair share of taxes. And so we in the community said, hey, wait a minute. You know, as long as this corporation is operating within our community, we expect it to do a better job, to be a better neighbor. You know, nobody's saying, oh, Chevron is awful, we want them to leave and this and that. We're just saying, no, we expect, we all pay our fair share of taxes, and we think Chevron should too, you know, and it should be subject to regulations that will benefit the community and recognizing the principles of environmental justice, because the communities that are most affected by the pollution that live close to and downwind of the refinery, as I said earlier, are very low-income communities, mostly Latino and African-American, and there are extremely high asthma rates among their children. You know, we have a lot of other heart disease, cancer, and that sort of thing. So we really feel strongly that Chevron needs to, you know, clean up its act. So we've been successful in getting a few people elected to the city council. It's a constant struggle because Chevron puts so much money into the elections. They put so much money into PR saying, oh, we're great, you know, and we're giving to local nonprofits and we're wonderful. And if without us, local economy would collapse and this and that. And we just try to straighten people up. For the most part, voters recognize, they see through the hype. Of course, some are convinced by it, but most of them see through the hype. And it's kind of interesting to note, since the RPA has come into existence and people have been really pushing back and demanding that Chevron do a better job, they've actually about tripled the amount of donations they make to local organizations. I mean, it's still a drop in the bucket considering their profits, but, you know, it's sort of their guilty conscience is getting to them, and they're you know,
well, I saw when I was in Richmond last year that they were even helping finance little coffee shops starting by minority business owners. I mean, there's no level of which their PR doesn't seem to be willing to go.
Right.
Now, when is the next election for city council in Richmond?
It's this coming fall in November of 2014.
So this is going to be a battleground on many fronts. I mean, obviously, you're looking for that fifth vote. Or how many seats are up this election?
Okay, so it'll be a real interesting election because Mayor McLaughlin will term out. She was elected mayor in 2006 and reelected in spite of a huge smear campaign put out by Chevron. She was reelected in 2010, but she's limited to 2 terms as mayor. So she will term out, so there will be an open mayor seat. And then on the city council, 3 of the current city council members are up for reelection. And
how many of those 3 that are up for election are part of your 4 votes that you have now?
So the three that are up for re-election, one of them is a member of the Richmond Progressive Alliance, Councilmember Jovanka Beckles. and she's running for re-election. We're definitely supporting her. And we will have candidates for the other two seats. One of them is announced. His name is Eduardo Martinez. He ran in the last election, came very close to being elected. Chevron put up a huge smear campaign against him. Again, just nonsense sort of things. But he's very strong, and we expect him to get elected. We will have a third council candidate. It hasn't been announced yet. It will be announced next week. And we will have a mayor's candidate again who's not been announced yet. So we are planning to run four candidates in this campaign.
And that might give you the votes you need then.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So we all need to mark that on the calendar in case you call for help. How do people get in touch with y'all if they want to know more about your campaign, Marilyn?
Sure. Our website is www.richmondprogressivealliance.net.
www.richmondprogressivealliance.net.
That's correct.
And just anybody will pick up that email and respond, I guess, Marilyn.
I beg your pardon?
And anybody who gets that email will respond and see how they can be helpful.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, go to that website. It lists our email, our phone number, and you can see copies of our online newsletter and get more information, and we'd love to hear from you.
And probably the website goes into each of these campaigns you've been involved in, too. Does it have facts?
Yes.
And
yes,
okay.
Yes.
We've been so lucky today to be talking to Marilyn Langlois, who's the coordinator of the steering committee for the Richmond Progressive Alliance. As she was saying, if you want to get a hold of the Richmond Progressive Alliance and find out more about their innovative strategy that they worked out with old California Acorn, now called ACE, the Alliance in California. They and ACE figured out a way to use eminent domain. They're one vote short. They've been getting a lot of attention for this because it could be a way for a lot of people to save their houses. You can get in touch with them at www.richmondprogressivealliance.net. Thank you, Marilyn. This has been Wade's World. We'll see you next Friday, 9 to 9:30. This is KAVF, 88.3 FM, the voice of the people, 100,000 watts. This is Wade's World.